I'm Caroline, a yoga teacher with a special interest in menopause based in Edinburgh.
And hello, I'm Dr. Claire, a GP with a special interest in menopause based in North London.
Together we are the Menopause Sisters and we are here to guide and support you through your menopause journey. Welcome to UK Health Radio and to our fourth show. I'm still keeping track, actually. I'm sure there's going to be a point, Claire, where I lose track of what number we're on.
Yeah, me too. I'm not even keeping track. I think it's just as it's one of those things, like you say, we're going to lose track soon.
How is your October break going?
Well, very good. We've been pumpkin carving today, which was it involved quite a lot of effort, I have to say, because the boys chose the largest pumpkins that they could find and we had to carry those all the way back home. But it's been good. How about yours?
No fingers cut off in the process.
No.
It's been good so far this week. Busy back into work after my week off last week. And now suddenly thinking, yeah, probably like you, Halloween, and thinking, oh my goodness, I think I've got about 20 kids coming to my back garden on Sunday. And thinking, I offered to cook and make food. And yeah, was looking at Nigella Lawson's suggestions of blood clot jelly earlier today.
So that's... that just sounds grim.
That's where I'm at today. So really looking forward to today's guest, Corinna. I'm going to hand over to Dr. Claire to introduce her.
So we're delighted to welcome Corinna to the show today and to talk to her a bit about her transition and her journey thus far. She is the co-founder of Coco Rio Creative Childcare, which is a childcare agency that matches fully vetted creatives, musicians, actors and dancers with families for smart childcare services. Importantly, she is also the London coordinator for the DAISY Network, the only charity supporting women with premature ovarian insufficiency in the UK and internationally. So we're very excited to have her here today with us. Corinna grew up in Italy and has been a child singer since the age of 5. She started entering puberty, but suddenly her development stopped and since the age of 10 suffered with lots of symptoms which her doctors never fully put together. At the age of 15, after never having a period, naturally she was diagnosed with what was premature ovarian insufficiency, although at the time she was given a very long name only describing her symptoms and told that this was an incredibly rare condition. During her teenage years, Corinna turned to drama and moved to the UK at the age of 18 to study. She's been working in fashion, theatre and performance and arts management since then and now runs her own business at the age of 25. So welcome, Corinna. Thank you so much for being here today and to start to share your journey with us at the Menopause Sisters and UK Health Radio.
Thank you very much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
I'm thinking at the age of 25, that's a lot so far. I'm listening to the bio, Claire, was just, you know, your journey so far in life will stop, and that is a lot. Corinna, could you maybe just take a moment to begin with to describe and explain to our listeners what POI is, maybe what it stands for, go over that again, and what it really means.
Yeah, of course. So POI is premature ovarian insufficiency, which used to be called POF, so premature ovarian failure, until just a few years ago. Now the name's been changed because the previous name just sounded really, really awful. It's also basically premature menopause. So it's when the ovaries stop working before their time, basically. If that happens before the age of 40, it's called POI. If it happens between 40 and the actual age of the menopause, then it's just called early menopause.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for explaining that. And how old, remind me how old you were when you diagnosed?
So I was 15 then, almost 16.
So kind of bang in the middle there of teenage years, that kind of, as we know, as women, it can be a really quite challenging time anyway, as we can navigate the changes physically, mentally, and with our peer groups and friends and friendships. Were there any particular symptoms that you found awkward, embarrassing? At that time, I imagine, you know, you're trying to just fit in, you're trying to be able to be with your friends and have fun. And so was there anything in particular that changed specifically for you and made you feel perhaps very different?
Yeah, so I would say the main one for me was always the lack of breast development. I mean, that's you know, that can sound trivial because it's not actually a painful symptom. It was just really exhausting for me to keep waiting and feel like I wasn't the same as the other girls. And I would wear a bra, you know, just to, you know, feel normal, to look normal. But I, you know, I just really felt really embarrassed about it. I felt really embarrassed when I went to the swimming pool or before going to the beach on holiday, I would be really, really embarrassed. And I've always been quite skinny, so it wasn't like a tragedy. You know, I could sort of just look generally very skinny and you know, very tall teenager, sort of still growing up. But for me, it was really the most uncomfortable thing, I guess, even more than the actual physical symptoms.
That's interesting you mentioned that, because at that time around 15, 16, we are so in tune with how we look and how our friends are looking and how we're developing. And you mentioned, you know, you've been working in the theatre and fashion. And so I imagine at that time, because you had had an interest in performing and singing and in fashion. So wanting to perhaps wear certain items that friends were wearing or that were in fashion, you know, were in trend at the time and not being able to. And I can imagine that was quite difficult.
Yeah, I've just been hiding behind clothes for those years. You know, I just really didn't feel myself. I didn't feel like I could sort of even have a voice. It sounds, you know, it sounds really big, but it, you know, it was really the case under all points of view in terms of, you know, not really being able to share what was going on with me, because I really didn't know at the time, and also being really ashamed of it at the same time, which is not great.
Going through puberty anyway is hard, but also when you feel different to other people, that can be twice as hard in a way. What were some of the other symptoms that you experienced, and were they difficult to put together to form an idea of what was happening?
Yeah, they were really different, and so I guess that's probably why doctors never sort of put them all together, but equally, looking back, they seem very simple symptoms to spot, so I feel really, really angry. You know, we could have saved a few years then, and definitely lots of pain. So the first one was not the most clear. It was related to my vocal cords. So I'd always been singing, and suddenly at the age of 11, when I was really having the best time in this choir and really like getting all my solos in, and honestly, I was absolutely loving it. Eventually, just my voice range shrunk, and I started to have to sort of put a lot of effort into singing. You know, my voice was really strained, and I went to a specific, you know, specialist doctor who said, oh, it's just nodules. It's a very common condition for singers. You just need to rest your voice for a while and sort of retrain your voice. But I did all of that and things weren't getting better. And I just knew there was something there, you know, because I've always been so diligent with voice resting and the exercises. And I just felt, why is it not getting better? Like, I knew there was something related to, you know, to something bigger. And I kept injuring myself a lot as well. So I was very sporty then, did synchronized swimming and athletics. And I just kept injuring myself over and over again. I was on crutches about 3 to 4 times a year. So basically, I was never really training. But, you know, I'm very tall, and I was growing into this very tall person. And I guess doctors just, you know, dismissed it as, you know, you're just growing tall, you're just growing really quickly, it's going to be fine in a few years' time. And yeah, that was definitely painful as well. But also, you know, little things like not being able to sleep very well, not that little, I guess, but not as big. And I also had lots of migraines, anxiety, mood-related issues, but also heart palpitations, which I was referred to a cardiologist for at the time, and obviously they didn't see anything. And now, you know, knowing more about the menopause and POI in general, I can really see how all these things were connected. But at the time, they were really never put together, not even when I actually got diagnosed. So
it's incredible, isn't it, when you think of all these individual symptoms being kind of, I mean, collectively being caused by one thing, essentially. What age were you when you first started to notice some of the physical symptoms?
Yeah, I think I was about 10, possibly even slightly earlier, with sort of mood related and sleep related issues. Because I'd started to develop around the age of 9, I think. That's when things started to happen. And then, you know, it sort of didn't continue. So now looking back, things like migraines and sleep and mood issues have been there for a very long time.
And that must, and I'm just thinking for the average woman in the UK, when you go through the menopause, it's at the age of 51. And obviously there's a lot of chat about the menopause at the moment. And there is obviously quite a lot of misinformation, but women are starting to become more self-educated and self-aware. But then I think of you at the age of 10 or 11 doing, going through this on your own. And actually, how could you have been self-educated? What could you have done? There's not much you could have done differently, really. And certainly your parents probably couldn't have done anything differently. So, really, I guess one of the things I'm thinking of is what would have, with these symptoms that you're having and going backwards and forwards to the doctors for, what one thing do you think would have helped in terms of your diagnosis? What do you think that you could say, looking back, what would I have wanted to happen?
I guess my period had never come, so that's quite a simple question to ask a child who's having all these issues if they've had their period yet. And possibly sending me for blood tests, they would have seen a very, very high FSH level. I think that's quite a simple way to diagnose POI, and obviously maybe not straight away, not the first year of symptoms, but knowing that they were persisting, I think this should have happened much earlier than when I was 15. And as you say, it's really difficult at that age because you just assume this is normal, because you've never really been an adult or gone through puberty before. So I just really assumed that was normal, just feeling really horrible. Well, everyone else tells me they're also feeling horrible, so I guess I'm just going through puberty,
And menopause is often described as a second puberty, isn't it, at the other end? And actually, this is something we've talked about between ourselves, is, within education, children learn about puberty, and what's going to happen in their teenage years, but they're not taught about the other end, that kind of almost second puberty. And actually, I wonder if that had been in the kind of education system, if that had been mentioned, there would have maybe have been a light bulb moment, maybe not with the, with the mix of symptoms you had, maybe not for your age, but actually just bringing that awareness to young people could potentially help future generations.
Yeah, absolutely. Even just doctors being more aware that this can happen at any age. But equally, obviously, I could have maybe linked the dots. My family could have also. I mean, my mum was going through the menopause at the time, and she also didn't receive amazing treatments then. And I think she wasn't fully aware of all the symptoms or the extent to which all the symptoms can really have an impact. So I think there's still a lot to be done. And I mean, this was a while ago, but things are definitely looking better now. But if people just know what the menopause is and what POI is, I'm sure they can really help their friends as well, not just themselves if they're going through it.
And the statistics, the numbers are low, but they're not insignificant, are they, Claire?
Yeah, no, and Corinna, you can tell us about this, because actually you are one of the London coordinators of the DAISY network. Tell us a bit about that and kind of numbers of POI that you know of.
Definitely. Yeah, so the DAISY network is the charity supporting women with POI, and I stumbled upon it very, on a very random occasion. I wasn't really pointed to it, unfortunately. I wasn't really told about it. I wasn't even told my condition was called POI. And then when I looked at their website, I realised POI is actually really common. So 1 in 100 women under 40 is diagnosed with POI, which is a lot. 1 in 1,000 under 30 and 1 in 10,000 under 20. And a doctor told me that about 1 in 100,000 under sort of before development is diagnosed with POI. So it's a very common condition, especially among slightly older women. But equally, we're all in this together. We all go through the same symptoms, and it's just something that, it's so similar to the menopause that just everyone should be aware of.
And it's being aware of all those symptoms and joining the dots, isn't it?
Exactly. And there's so many. I'm still learning about some of them every day. I'm like, oh, this could also be linked to my estrogen,
Yeah, I was talking to a friend yesterday, and she said, Caroline, is vertigo one of the symptoms? I said, it could be, yes. You need to see your doctor and discuss it with your healthcare professional. But yes, it possibly is. We're going to pause there for a moment and just hear some messages from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So we were talking about the DAISY network, Corinna, just before we took that break. And thank you for sharing those statistics. Can you tell us a little bit more about the work you do for the DAISY network as one of their coordinators?
Yeah, definitely. So there's lots of coordinators all around the UK, but also around the world now. And what we do is we just try to be the sort of point of contact for women in our area. So we offer all sorts of meet and greets for social purposes, nothing specifically medical, although the charity does offer medical advice. And there are some medical advisors on the board and some live chats and all sorts of support there. So what we do is we just organize events, also fundraisers, because actually there's not much money that goes towards research about POI, but actually there's so much scope for it. I'm not the best person to talk about this, but there's a lot of sort of research in terms of using stem cells to rejuvenate ovaries and things like that apparently in the future could be really beneficial.
It's some amazing work that you all do, actually, just to try and raise awareness of what is, you know, like you say, the menopause is not talked about enough. It's talked about more than it ever used to be, but certainly with earlier menopause, it's just raising that awareness and having a point of contact, because I imagine going through this at a younger age, like we've mentioned, is fraught with difficulties. Can you give us an idea of what some of the things you hear, or maybe share some of the feelings, sort of the psychological symptoms that maybe you had and that you hear from others?
Yeah, it's a real variety, but I guess most people feel really ashamed to talk about this with other people. So having a support, community or group where you can really be honest about how you're feeling and even ask very personal questions like, how do you approach telling people about your diagnosis, telling your partners, telling your partners' families, and so on? How do you, how have you done it? You know, just to offer some sort of human, honestly, just human advice, that's really, really helpful. Some people get, very bad sort of psychological symptoms as well. And obviously, we always recommend to seek psychological support as well. But also practical things like, where do you put your gel? Very, very simple questions are not necessarily too medical, but they are kind of related with all treatments and different things that we have to remember to do in order to cope with our symptoms. So it's just so nice to normalize this. You know, if I am to talk about this with someone who doesn't have POI or doesn't know much about it, they will interact only to a certain extent. But actually talking to someone who knows everything about it and it's their normal makes me feel normal as well. And I think that's really, really important, because doctors sometimes tend to sort of keep it very medical, and it's obviously their role to do so, but when all your body and all your sort of mental health as well is impacted by something, it can be really alienating to feel so medicalized, and it's just really nice to get out of that and sort of embrace it more as a holistic, that's just me, that's stuff that I have to live with.
No, I can imagine. And actually, we talk about a lot about connection, don't we? Regardless of what age you are when this happens, it's so important having connection and chats with other people, because that's what can help, you know will help you know that you're not alone, actually, and be able to, like you say, speak to people that have and have an understanding of what you're going through, even if the experience is very different. There's an understanding there as well. You mentioned your gel there, or where, you know, someone would come and sort of join groups and chat about what, you know, that might be a question, where to put the gel. And it just made me think about the health risks of early POI. I don't know if you're able to share perhaps a little bit more about that for us, Corinna. That would be really, really helpful for our listeners to hear.
Sure. Yes, so actually, that's something that's not talked about enough. I think there's a lot of focus on the fertility side of things, because obviously there's stuff that can be done about it, but equally, it's big impacts on life. But I don't think there's enough focus on the health risks that people need to really be mindful of. So it's not only symptoms that you have on a day-to-day basis that you have to control and make sure you take your HRT for, but it's actually your future health that's at risk if you don't take it. And this is really important, because there's all sorts of, you know, theories online whether you should or you should not use HRT, but actually, unless your medical professionals advise against it, you should really, really listen to them. And the main ones would be heart health, brain health, and bone health. So I was actually told about bone health from the beginning, and given vitamin D and calcium at the time. Also something else you need to do aside from taking these supplements is also checking that your bone density is okay. So DEXA scans every now and then are really recommended. But I was never really told about brain and heart health. Well, actually, they're very much linked to estrogen levels. So sometimes, you know, if you have symptoms, possibly it could mean that your dose need to be sort of tweaked or changed. And that can also mean that, you know, you're potentially putting your future self at risk, not just your sort of present self with all sorts of symptoms.
Did you start HRT relatively early in your journey?
Yeah, so I did. So I was given both estrogen and progesterone, though, which apparently shouldn't have been the case because my breasts hadn't developed yet. But I was given that in very, very small doses. And that was extremely frustrating because I just wanted my period to come and to sort of fully develop. But I now appreciate that was done for a reason, you know, to make sure everything developed properly. But I was very quickly moved on to the birth control pill. And I wasn't really told, you know, why that was happening or really explained, like, if I had a choice or why would I choose HRT instead. So I just never really questioned it. And that wasn't really a good idea because I didn't feel very good. And I was on it for about 8 years, so possibly even more, before discovering that my condition was actually POI, and actually HRT is much better in terms of, you know, managing symptoms. So yeah, it's been a bit of a strange journey. So I've just recently restarted HRT about 6 months ago. And that's also been a bit difficult because obviously you need to tweak the dose, and it's not as straightforward as a pill every day, is it?
We often talk about the menopause as being a bit of a moving goalpost and having to tweak your doses on a regular basis. And when I say regular, I don't mean day to day necessarily, but I mean from year to year, or sometimes for some women, month to month, that they might have a recurrence of their symptoms and they might need to adjust their doses. So it's certainly not a one size fits all treatment, but it is important, I guess, for our listeners to remember that actually your doses might change. It's not that it's not working, it might be that you just need a little bit more, you need a change. And I think that's something that as medical professionals we really need to be aware of and support women no matter what their age is, because it certainly isn't here you go, here's your prescription, go away, come back in 10 years and let's see how you go. It's kind of that ongoing monitoring. Is that something you felt that has got better for you, or do you feel that a part of it is because you've become more aware of your symptoms and more educated yourself because you've had to?
Yeah, I think most of it has been learning about POI and learning about the treatment and recognising symptoms, because I've lived for so long without really knowing what was a syndrome and what was just me being me. So that's been quite an interesting journey. But definitely it has helped me in terms of understanding when I need to sort of up my dose. As well, it's important to say that young women may need higher doses. So sometimes some doctors may not be fully aware of it, and it's worth sort of pointing them to the guidelines. Usually PI specialist doctors are amazing. But yeah, I've found it really, really difficult initially to move to HRT because all my symptoms came back because I was given quite a low dose at the beginning. But I think even things like trying testosterone, for example, if you know that's an option, it's always worth mentioning to your medical professionals, because they may just not consider that or not be fully aware of it. But as soon as you mention things, then obviously they'll do their work. So yeah, for me, it's just been a bit of sort of writing up lots of questions before every appointment and making sure that I get an answer for all of them. And it feels always a bit rushed. There's never enough time. There's always too many symptoms to talk about. But yeah, at least you're doing your best to get the best possible treatment.
Does the DAISY Network website have quite a lot of information on it as well?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of information about medical side of things, but also psychological and all sorts. And actually, there's a new book that's now available to pre-order, which is incredible. It's basically a little booklet that everyone should read if you're diagnosed with POI. It's exactly what I would have loved to read when I was diagnosed, and I obviously didn't have. So it's really helpful. There's a lot of human side of things as well. I think it's very important, sort of how to manage, you know, your day-to-day life and the impact of a diagnosis, etc.
One of our questions was going to be, what would you have told yourself? What would you have liked to have known if you could, you know, look back at your sort of 10, 11-year-old self, or even your 15-year-old self? You know, what would you have liked to have happened or known? You mentioned the booklet. Was there anything else?
Yeah, I think just a bit of guidance in terms of what my diagnosis actually was. Like, I would have loved to have a name so I could actually Google it, because the name I was given wasn't Googleable. Like, nothing really would come up. And that was a bit of a shock. And I was also told this was an extremely rare condition, which it is, because it was diagnosed before completing puberty. But actually, it's really the same as other types of POI and early menopause. But also, yeah, I guess just to know someone who had it, I think that would have been amazing, just to talk to someone. I did ask my doctors back then, but I guess because it was a pediatric endocrinologist, there weren't many children with POI. And so, you know, there was no way they could sort of link me up with them. So I think, yeah, just a general sort of step-by-step, you know, instructions, what things you may have to sort of watch out for, because I wasn't really aware of most symptoms, and I just, you know, just really blamed it on lots of different things. Well, I think I could have accepted them and sort of managed them much better if I'd known sort of the full picture.
And is there anything else that has helped, Corinne, anything else that helped? I'm sort of thinking about other forms of exercise or diet, because obviously you mentioned that, you know, you had to give up quite a lot of the things that brought you huge joy, you know, the synchronized swimming, the singing. Are there other things that have helped you over the last sort of 10 years to manage symptoms?
Yeah, so I try to sort of think that I have to look after my own health a little bit more than, you know, sort of anyone else my age, which is a bit of a shame, but also really, really good for me, because ultimately I'm just sort of having a very healthy lifestyle. So in the end, it's sort of positive, I guess. So I do lots of yoga, actually, and that's helped so much because it really strengthens all my muscles and really makes my joint pain much better. I do still have some hip pain, which is really annoying. Hopefully even more estrogen will help, but that's definitely improved it. And in terms of things like caffeine and alcohol, those usually trigger hot flushes or just general heart problems, heart palpitations, and I really don't like not sleeping, so I try to not have much of those, and that really does tend to help. Equally, if I do want some of them, I just need to prepare myself that I'm not going to sleep very much the following night. So it's just being aware of it, you know, it's fine. I don't need to completely cut that off. But other than that, I really just try to you know, look after myself. Ultimately, some sacrifices are are easy to make, as long as, you know, you have a decent sort of quality of life, and everyone's priorities are different. But for me, yeah, feeling strong, I guess, and not feeling pain in my body has really been, you know, my main, I guess my main source of, you know, compensating for what's happening.
I think it's really important, like you said, you mentioned there, you know, sort of almost giving yourself up for maybe not a great night's sleep or some symptoms for when you do treat yourself to some caffeine or some alcohol. And we're both huge advocates of not, you know, not trying to say no to everything, not trying to cut everything out, but becoming really aware of what the triggers are. I can empathize with the joint pain and the muscle ache. And I know if I have a bit of sugar or alcohol or caffeine, I'm going to pay for it later that day or the next day. So it's as you say, it's just finding that balance, isn't it? Just finding a balance between what's helpful, what isn't, and then also trying to find some joy as well.
Yeah, it's hard to do if you don't know all the symptoms. Like if you so I use the Balance app, for example, and there are so many symptoms, and I just realized even things like my IBS like got much worse when my estrogen wasn't right. And had I known this like 5 years ago, I wouldn't have gone like gluten and dairy free for 2 years, you know, like it would have been so much easier to manage. But it's, you know, as soon as you know all these little things that trigger you, you can really like work around them.
We often talk about the Balance app, don't we, Caroline? Because it's just one of those great tools which, you know, you can input your data, you can print it out for your doctor, you can present it to your doctor. And we've actually spoken, haven't we, Caroline, about how, you know, you can have these questions and you can have stuff lined up for your appointment so that you go in armed and ready to have that discussion. And then if you've got the Balance app and all the data you've got on there sort of readily available, that can be really helpful. It's a good tool, isn't it?
I think it's incredibly helpful. I mean, I've used it and it's really lovely to hear that Corinna's used it as well. I know Dr. Louise Newson will be pleased to hear that we're talking about it again, because actually for me, it's on my phone. Unfortunately, I am still wedded to my phone. not very yogic, but it's just helpful to put it in somewhere. And it's the one thing you often have with you these days. And so I find that really easy. I know lots of women who like to write the symptoms down. They maybe have their notebook by their bed or have a journal where they can write things down, and feelings, you know, sometimes that can be really, really helpful if you suffer from anxiety or worry or insomnia, having something by the bed just to be able to kind of almost, it's like a download next to your bed. And sometimes writing can really, really be helpful. But yeah, otherwise, I think the app's really, really, really helpful. I loved what you said when we were sort of chatting over email before we came together, Corinna. You'd said that every closed door has been a new opportunity, or an opportunity for something new. And it just really, really resonated with me, because actually, regardless of what age you are, it's a huge transition, and actually a really big transition for a 15, 16-year-old. And I just loved that positive line that, you know, actually you've made it in some way work for you, even though you've had a really difficult time. There's been layers there, a lot of symptoms, having to give up some of the activities and hobbies that you really, really enjoyed, but you've found a way through it. And I'd love to hear about some of the new opportunities or doors that opened for you.
Yeah, I think it's really important to talk about this, because sometimes we can just be a bit pessimistic and just negative about, you know, a diagnosis, especially with others. Like when you tell others, they'll be like, oh, poor you, I'm so sorry. And actually, I don't want you to be sorry. It's just, you know, a card I've been dealt and I have to sort of work with it. You know, there's much worse things in life. So yeah, in terms of sort of making things better, I guess it's always been fun for me, because I was so young when I was diagnosed that I really, you know, didn't have my life sort of planned ahead completely. And so I just went a little bit crazy. I just moved to a new country, and I just really stuck with this drama passion that I had, which was basically initially just a way to use my voice in a way that wasn't as straining as singing. So actually it was just, you know, something I tried for a year, because I was like, actually I'm such a shame I can't sing anymore, but at least I'm sort of doing something similar. So you know, you have to find new passions, new things, and even if it's, you know, something you're just using as a compromise, then you never know you know, maybe you really love it and it's going to work for you. And I've moved country and now I'm a British citizen, which is crazy. So, you know, just things happen to you and they will be good as well. So not just necessarily bad, but I think at the time, you know, when you have to give up things you love, that's really, really tough. And maybe I've been really lucky because I was so young. I was, you know, really able to reshape sort of my life. Well, you know, if you're already, you know, established in your own sort of way of doing things, you know, it can be much harder. But I think even things like working in fashion. So I've worked as a model. So I did lots of runway shows and it, you know, it was obviously great fun. I was a student. I was really young and just great way to meet new people and to sort of learn about the world. But my feet really couldn't handle it anymore. Like I kept breaking like bones in my foot by just literally doing Pilates exercises. So obviously it wasn't fine walking in heels and just realized, well, you know, actually I don't love the environment that much. I don't feel creative enough. And, you know, probably I would have stuck with it if this hadn't happened, but it just was too painful. And I'm really glad that I did, because I went on and did a master's degree and sort of started my own business with a friend, and it's now my job. So it's, yeah, there's always opportunities. It's just, it's a shame to give the others up, but there's always something else sort of, you know, around the corner waiting for you.
On that positive note, we're going to take another break and hear from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to UK Health Radio and the Menopause Sisters show with Dr. Claire and myself, Caroline. And we're really full of joy, I should say, to have Corinna talking to us today about POI. So premature menopause might be the most easiest way to describe it, but also known as premature ovarian insufficiency. And just before the break, Corinna was sharing the positive things that have come out of it, you know, changing directions, although she's had to give up quite a lot of hobbies she loved when she was younger, how that had led to different and new opportunities, and just really enjoyed hearing about those opportunities. And you're now a co-founder of Coco Rio, and I love the name. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about this business that you started with a friend.
Yeah, sure. The name is actually quite a sort of interesting story because we wanted to combine our names. So I'm Corinna and my co-founder is called Leia. But we tried to combine the names like Coco Lala, Coco something else. And it's already a lingerie company, Coco Lala, so it couldn't work. So that's why we waited until her son was born, Rio, and they work really well together. So that's the backstory. But basically we work with all sorts of creatives. So obviously my background's in theatre and all sorts of arts administration, and my co-founder is in music. And we just realised that we both did lots of babysitting when we were creative students and creative professionals, you know, as a sort of side job doing freelance, you know, in between freelance gigs, and just parents absolutely loved it because we added that extra bit, you know, for free, basically. And so now we created this agency where we basically recruit incredible professionals who may want sort of part-time ad hoc work and match them with families. So families get something that's a little bit better than sort of boring regular childcare and creatives get a great, you know, great job that's also flexible. So it's been really fun to grow this. Yeah, also during a pandemic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've got visions now of, you know, these young children being treated to a full-on show in their living room. But yeah. What a brilliant idea. And so this is quite, obviously quite a new venture. How old is Coco Rio?
Yeah, so it's almost two now. I mean, we've worked on it for much longer than that. But we also had other jobs and working on this sort of in the evening and weekends and, you know, things like that. And then about, I think it was December 2019 that we officially launched it. And then obviously the pandemic hit very shortly after. But, you know, we're still going strong and growing. Our team is constantly growing and it's really good fun. I've always wanted to sort of work on something that was my own, but I never thought I would do it this early. But Leah had this wonderful idea and I had to take advantage of it and jump on board. It was, yeah, it's been a bit crazy. You know, you always want to have more knowledge and more tools when you start something. You always want to wait, you know, oh, it's going to be better if I know this other thing. But actually being dragged into it, it's works really well for learning fast, I guess.
I know there'll be many of our listeners with children of all ages. So please do tell us where we can find the details, the website or social media handles.
Oh, fantastic. So it's Coco Rio, so CoCoRIO.co.uk. And that's our website. We're also on Instagram, CocoRIO_UK, and on Facebook. If you quote the Menopause Sisters, you'll get a wonderful discount. So yeah, just get in touch. We've also got an email address, if you like, info@CoCoRIO.co.uk.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for sharing that and offering our listeners a discount as well, Corinne. That's really, really kind. So going back to POI, we've talked a little bit about, you know, your journey, but also we wanted to ask you about some of your top tips for those that are going through this perhaps at the moment, or perhaps they maybe think they are, or they're going through the diagnosis process. Have you got any top tips for listeners or for those that might be in a similar position, similar age to you?
Definitely. Yes, I would say to head to the Daisy Networks website and really give it a long study and read. There's so much information that can be useful in terms of understanding symptoms and knowing how to approach the topic with doctors. Finding the right doctors is really, really important. It really depends on where you live. There are some POI specialist clinics, but it's really important you try to get a referral through the NHS there. You don't need to go private, there's plenty of great clinics, but it's really important you get the right doctor, because I've been with wrong doctors for a long time and they just really don't know how to treat you. So that's really important. But also, I guess, learn how to accept it. It will take maybe decades, I don't know, I'm still learning how to accept it, but talking to other people who have it and sort of embracing connections with other members of the Daisy network and people in your area. You know, there's all sorts of networks. I'm the London coordinator, but there's lots of coordinators around the UK. You can just get in touch with them, get in touch with the Daisy network, see who's your closest representative, and they'll definitely be able to point you to some sort of social activities or support groups. The Daisy network actually runs a support group I think every month online, so that's really helpful, because that was the first thing I attended from Daisy Network, and it was really, really eye-opening to just chat with people who had exactly the same thing. It was a bit overwhelming, but it's definitely worth it. And yeah, do take care of yourself as well, not just, you know, research and homework. You can also just, you know, take time for yourself. It's okay to feel rubbish sometimes, and yeah, just allow yourself to feel all those symptoms. I always suggest writing down symptoms, either, as we said, on the Balance app or just old-fashioned sort of journal, because it's really useful to sort of track them and understand them yourself. It may take a really long time for you to know what's a symptom and what's just you, but it's useful.
Thank you. I think that's really important, isn't it? It's like sort of trying to unpick what could be one thing and what could be something else. But actually, I often say to my patients, particularly you know, if you're around the age of the natural menopause in the UK of 51, I often say to them, you know, just don't try and unpick it, just write it all down, and we together, that's the thing, you know, we can figure it out together, and hopefully, you know, go through that with a few consultations, because like you said, Corinne, it can take some time to come to terms with it, but also to sort of get that diagnosis really spot on. Thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been absolutely fascinating to hear about your work, your positivity, particularly around the Daisy Network as well, because I think that's just vitally important as another kind of source of information out there for anybody really that is wanting to know a bit more, but also just being so open with your journey, because I can imagine that's quite a tough thing at times in the past possibly to have shared. So thank you so much.
We've got one last question, don't we, Dr. Claire?
Yeah.
One last question. We have to prepare our guests. This is the one we have to prepare our guests for in advance. And it's influenced by Eve Ensler's play, The Vagina Monologues. And it is, if your vagina got dressed, Corinna, what would it be wearing?
It would definitely have some sort of funky socks or cute socks, depending on the occasion.
Fantastic. Brilliant.
It's fantastic. Thank you so much.
We do love that question because it always gets quite a laugh. So, Corinna, what an inspiration she was to talk to. And just wonderful to hear her positive outlook, actually. You know, she's obviously had a really, really hard time being misdiagnosed and finally finding out, you know, what she had, what it was, how she needed to handle and manage it. But an incredible story.
Really, really incredible, because actually, you know, we've spoken about this in the past, is that we are really keen to make this part of a woman's life, wherever that is, a positive step. And yes, when it happens at a younger age, there are obviously more difficulties associated with it. It's more of a taboo. It's not spoken about, you know, certainly at that age group. And you heard from Corinna talking about how she felt different to her peers. When you're already feeling sort of slightly wobbly going through that stage in your life, and then you're thrown another huge curveball, it can be difficult. But hearing that positivity, I think, is really important, because, you know, there's a lot out there that people and women can do to help, just to try and educate themselves, but also to get the answers they need.
Often we talk in yoga philosophy how, you know, negative feelings or negative thoughts can be treated with opposites. And actually, when we're feeling rubbish, or we're suffering from anxiety, or we're just not feeling great about ourselves physically, mentally, whatever that might be or look like, I try to call on that and that yoga philosophy, because actually, you know, it's just remembering, how can I turn this on my head? And I realize for those that really struggle with their mental health, that is not an easy ask. That's not an easy thing to do. But just to have that in the back of your mind, is there something that brings you joy? Is there something you can turn around in some way? As Corinna had said, you know, she closed certain doors, had closed, and yet she'd found it to be an opportunity for new things, for new ventures, for new activities, new hobbies.
That new connection, you know, we always talk about connections, don't we? That whether or not that's a social connection, we're talking from peers, or whether that's forming a new connection, you know, doing a different type of work, doing a different type of job, or starting something new. Those connections can be vital. It's particularly if they are the ones that give you joy, or at least, you know, she was great in talking about how she wasn't sure whether or not this was the right time of her life to be starting a new business. You know, there was always another thing that she needed to learn beforehand. But it just epitomises how you can just jump in and learn as you go, particularly if you've got that positive attitude, which she has in abundance.
I'd love to ask you as well, Claire, have you seen many patients over the last sort of 5-10 years in your work as a GP, and particularly now as a GP with a particular interest with menopause and post-reproductive health? Have you seen many cases of POI?
I've seen a handful, to be honest with you. It isn't It is reasonably rare. I mean, Corinna spoke about those statistics. It's not as rare as we once thought, but it's, I actually think I wonder how many we're missing, partly because, you know, all the symptoms that we are better at putting together in terms of the menopause at the age of, you know, 45 and upwards, it sort of makes a bit more sense. And I often tell my GP trainees, always have the perimenopause in the back of your head when a woman is over 40. But actually, having done this interview tonight, I think, you know, we should just have it in the back of our minds all the time. But yeah, I have seen a few, and Corinna's symptoms were very typical. The joint pains, the change in, you know, her ability to sit. It just highlighted, really, for me, those very specific symptoms that might go unnoticed, or might just be, you know, oh, your vocal cords have changed, you've got nodules. Well, why have they changed? What has happened? You know, really thinking about each symptom, and then if you have to, writing them down, you know, write all of that down. And for me as a GP, that's what I do a lot, is just if I see someone that I'm not quite sure of their diagnosis, it's writing all their symptoms down and looking at it on paper and going, what is going on, and identifying that. Because actually, we are probably missing quite a vast amount of young women that are having an earlier menopause, and we shouldn't be, really.
And I think the statistics, it's 1 in 100 are under 40, is that right?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's quite a large number, isn't it? 1 in 100 under 40, 1 in 1,000 under 30, and 1 in 10,000 under 20. So those numbers are not as small, I suppose, as we might think, but actually just having that in the back of your mind, whatever age you might be.
So with all the information that's available now to healthcare professionals, particularly the 14 Fish course that's free to all health professionals now, there's no excuse really not to know about this. I mean, I know, you know, it's hard because as a GP, there's a lot you need to know. But this is something that I think needs to be prioritised, because it's going to be happening to 50% of your patients. And actually, if we like Corinna said, if it's happening earlier, there are much more serious health implications associated with it than if it was happening at a more average age.
So we've come to the end of another show. Thank you for joining us on UK Health Radio. And we're the Menopause Sisters, Dr. Claire and myself, Caroline. And we look forward to hearing from you. If you have any questions or any particular topics, or perhaps potential suggestions for guests you think we should speak to, please do get in touch. It's hello@themenopausesisters.com. And we look forward to sharing another episode with you next week.